Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? The world running on EVs and renewable energy? Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
He owns and operates the Pack-A-Day podcast that airs 365 days a year with over 12 million views on YouTube. A new adventure begins. It's time for the Pack-A-Day radio show with Andy Herman on 1250 AM and 105.7 FM The Fan, powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook and on the free Odyssey app.
Happy Tuesday, Packers fans. Welcome into the Pack-A-Day radio show live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM The Fan Studios, powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook. We've got Dusty Evely coming on today at 8.20 AM. Pack-A-Day podcast, Acme Packing Company. Dusty does a little bit of everything. Excited to talk Packers-Bears with him. We'll get that game flush just like the Packers did yesterday, and we'll start looking ahead to Packers-Eagles. Excited for that conversation. Speaking of conversations, we'd love to have a conversation with you, whether it be...
Whether you want to
buy.
In a bear market or
sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Via on the Nicolay Law Fan call line, the talk line, or the text line, 414-677-1250. Send us your text, give us a call. Love to talk to you guys and get your thoughts on anything that went wrong, anything that's bothering you, and or what you think of this Packers-Eagles game coming up, or a variety of other topics that are floating around the interweb as well. We'll get to a lot of that today. I cannot believe that it is Wild Card Week. It's a really fun slate of matchups. We might go through those a little bit later in the show today, but we've got a lot of Packers stuff to discuss per usual. And let's start off with the unfortunate news yesterday that Christian Watson is in fact done for the season, probably well beyond that. He at minimum has a torn ACL that has been confirmed by numerous reports, Adam Schefter, Ian Rappaport, Rob Domofsky, etc. It sounds like there may be some additional damage as well. Hopefully nothing too crazy. You know, you could be talking MCL, LCL, meniscus. There's a lot of other things that could be going on there. The best case scenario is just that it's a clean ACL tear, but it sounds like it might be even a little bit more than that, which is obviously not ideal. This is going to clearly cost Christian Watson the remainder this year. It's going to clearly cost him the entire offseason next year, and probably will start the season in 2025 on the PUP list. I want to start by talking about the player himself. A brutal blow for Christian Watson for a variety of reasons. Number one, I'm sure he wants to be out there with his team this season to try to make this run in the playoffs and try to make a run towards the Super Bowl. I'm sure that is devastating for him that he's not going to be out there with the guys for the rest of this year. Next year, he will be in a contract year and he will be a free agent in 2026. The last thing that you want in your contract year is to be coming off a torn ACL, where usually it takes a year just to kind of get back to normal and, you know, potentially missing a chunk of that season due to that injury. That is clearly not ideal for him. And also just another injury for him, right? Like, there have been a variety of different hamstring injuries, knee injuries, ailments, and now you add a torn ACL plus potentially some other damage done, and you just start, unfortunately, having a reputation as a player, as an injury-prone player. For right or wrong, better or worse, you just unfortunately get a bit of that reputation, which is going to hurt him when he goes to free agency as well. So feel for him. It's an awful injury. And I know that there's frustration of like, oh, this dude just can't stay healthy. By all accounts, by every single account, this guy is the consummate professional, doing everything he can to stay healthy, to help the team. I mean, this is a guy that's out on the field doing a ton of unbelievable blocking on the outside for his teammates. That's not demanding the ball. That's not being a diva, you know, being like, you know, throw me so many passes per game. He's about whatever the team needs him to be. And he has such a gravity to him. Speaking of which, this is per Theo Ash, who does a great job covering the NFL. This is the 2024 Green Bay receiving core without Christian Watson on the field. 1.3 yards per route run, which would be 13th in the NFL, and a 2.4% explosive play rate per route, which is 19th in the NFL. With Christian Watson on the field, they would be 1.67 yards per route run, which would be first in the NFL, and a 3.7% explosive play per route, which is first in the NFL. The difference between Christian Watson on the field and off the field is first in yards per route run to 13th per yards in route run, and first in explosive play rate per route to 19th in explosive play rate per route. And when I talk about the gravity that he has, you can look at his box score stats, right? And this is why we don't scout box score stats. You look at Christian Watson and his overall numbers. I think he has 29 catches on the season. Just pulling that up right now. 29 catches for 620 yards and two touchdowns. You look at his overall numbers, 29 catches and two touchdowns. If I told you that the Eagles were losing a player with 29 catches and two touchdowns this week, it probably wouldn't even be a blip on your radar. You probably would be like, oh, all right, whatever. Like, they'll be fine. If you just look at the box score, it doesn't seem like that big of an issue. But A, he's averaging 21.4 yards per catch, which is a massive number, and it shows you some of the explosive play ability that he has. Number two is he just opens up things for everyone else because he has that gravity, because he pulls safeties and defensive backs with him. There's a play just recently, a few games ago, where he's going across the field and three defenders go with him, and it opens up the entire middle and left side of the field because Christian Watson pulls defenders with him when he's going down because they don't want to allow those explosive plays to him. And there's just not another player in the offense that has that sort of gravity or that pull that Christian Watson has. And it makes it so that the safeties aren't playing quite as deep, that they're not following that, you know, explosive, that another explosive playmaker on the outside. And it just condenses everything. And that means it's tougher for Josh Jacobs because those safeties are a little bit closer to the field. It means it's tougher for the underneath guys like Tucker Kraft. It changes the offense in its entirety. So like I said, first of all, I feel for the player, but trying to replace Christian Watson is also an extremely tall task. Now, from a depth chart standpoint, at least going into the season, you feel like, all right, like, well, they still have Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks. They still got Romeo Doubs and Bo Melton, Malik Heath. Like that felt, at least again, coming into the season, like if you're missing one of these guys, it's not going to be the end of the world. But it hasn't exactly worked out that way this season. Jaden Reed is having some struggles as of late, at least being that consistent playmaker, had a big fumble this past week. Dontavian Wicks has struggled with drops, although that seems to be mostly behind him at the moment. He's done a really nice job as of late, but he's not exactly been that explosive playmaker for them. Bo Melton's had an incredibly quiet season. Malik Heath has done well when he's been in the game, but he's been hardly in the game. That could certainly change this week. And Romeo Doubs has been good at times, but kind of disappears at times as well. And it hasn't been this breakout campaign for a lot of these young wide receivers that we were hoping for. I still feel overall fairly confident that, you know, when you go out with Dontavian Wicks, Romeo Doubs, Jaden Reed wide receiver core with Tucker Kraft at tight end, Josh Jacobs at running back, it feels like that is still enough playmaking out on the field. But they're going to have to show, especially these wide receivers, that they can still generate explosives down the field. And whether that's got to be Bo Melton with his speed, whether that's got to be Jaden Reed with his playmaking ability, Dontavian Wicks with his separation, just Romeo Doubs or Malik Heath, like we saw this past week with Heath, just going up and making a play. Whatever it is, they're going to have to, you know, really change up some of that explosive playmaking and take that mantle on with Christian Watson out. And it's not to say that they can't win without Christian Watson. It's not to say that this is the most catastrophic injury to a player that they've had, like, you know, prior to the playoffs or anything. Obviously, the Jaire Alexander injury is probably even more impactful than this. And, you know, obviously they've had like David Bakhtiari injuries in the past and things like that. Like this, I wouldn't quite put this in that stratosphere, but it is still a major loss for Green Bay. And then, like I said, this is not just a impact on 2020, well, now 2025 in this playoff run. It is a impact on this upcoming season as well as you get ready for next year. And you now have to start looking and really thinking about, all right, wide receiver is very much on the table now as a potential need for this team. And again, somebody look, at least somebody that maybe has some of that explosive playmaking ability and some of that gravity that maybe Christian Watson has to be able to, you know, pull defenders and open things up, be an explosive playmaker down the field, but also, again, opening things up for everyone else underneath. Wide receiver, definitely via free agency or the draft, and just maybe a little bit of the lack of growth from some of these other wide receivers playing an impact in that as well. Wide receiver definitely will be a potential need, especially based on this injury to Christian Watson. Now, as you look at the overall roster right now and the health of where this team is at, it's, again, I'll use the same word again, it's not catastrophic. You don't look at the overall injury report for Green Bay and be like, oh my goodness, there's so many injuries. How are they possibly going to overcome this? It's not like what's going on in Detroit and the multitude of injuries that they have over there. But it's not exactly where you want it to be either. Remember, Zane Anderson was out last week. He is still in concussion protocol per Matt LaFleur. Andre Dillard was out last week. As far as we know, he is still in concussion protocol as well. Quay Walker was out last week, and Matt LaFleur did seem mostly optimistic that Quay is going to be able to go this week, but that will be a big injury to keep an eye on. Sort of quietly, Eric Wilson's had kind of a rough couple weeks, and this is a really tough game for Eric Wilson. Minnesota, for example, really targeted Wilson in the passing game, actually, and in the running game. And Philadelphia, I would be willing to bet you, is going to do the same thing if Wilson's out there. Now, Quay has obviously had his up and down moments as well, but I think his skill set fits a little bit better for this Eagles game. So they could get Quay back. I think that would be a big win for this defense. Evan Williams was out last week. Matt did not seem super optimistic, just saying, you know, basically he's going to be questionable throughout the week and until he gets back at practice. You know, they don't really, and I'm paraphrasing here, they don't really have much expectation, or like they're just going to have to, you know, get him back first before there's any sort of progress there. Didn't, again, seem super optimistic, seem much more optimistic about Quay. So you got those four that were out last week. Christian Watson's now done for the year. Jaire Alexander's done for the year. We found out yesterday, per Tom Silverstein with Packers News, that Marshawn Lloyd is also now done for the year. He suffered another hamstring injury. So it's not even the appendectomy that is going to keep him out. It is another hamstring injury for Marshawn Lloyd. So a multitude of issues for him. It was reported as well by Tom that he is going to go down to Madison and see their hamstring specialists and try to figure out, you know, how they can keep him healthy next year. Which, by the way, I know Christian Watson's had some more injuries this year. His hamstring has not been an issue. Eric Stokes, his hamstring this year has not been an issue. So whatever they did last year in Madison to mitigate some of those hamstring injuries for Eric Stokes and Christian Watson has seemingly worked. So hopefully that'll work for Marshawn Lloyd. But Marshawn Lloyd, done for the year. Jordan Morgan, done for the year. And then, of course, less impactful here, especially with when the injuries took place. But A.J. Dillon and Tyler Davis, also out for the year. So players that you're not sure about going into this game or are out for this game or the season, you've got Zane Anderson, Andre Dillard, Quay Walker, Evan Williams still recovering from injuries, Christian Watson, Jaire Alexander, Marshawn Lloyd, Jordan Morgan, A.J. Dillon, Tyler Davis, out for the year. And then you also have the cloud hanging over Jordan Love and to some extent Malik Willis as well. Willis banged his finger. Of course, Jordan Love has the nerve issue after banging his elbow. Hopefully, especially from a Jordan Love standpoint, that's much ado about nothing. And we don't have to worry about that, and he's going to be good to go. And we get the update from Jordan at his locker this week that he's got full feeling back in his thumb. These things can go on a spectrum, meaning it can be something where you had it banged in the game and it went numb, and by midweek it's feeling basically 100% and you've got full feeling back. There have been other situations, like with Marcus Mariota, as I was talking to Justice Mosqueda for today's Pack-A-Day podcast, and he brought up, like, that was a nerve issue that lasted for, like, a couple years and really affected his career. And I'm not trying to fear-monger here with Jordan Love. By all accounts, it sounds like this is going to be something that is going to be pretty minor, and he's going to be good to go this week. But these things you have to take them seriously. And until we get that full go that he's like, yep, it's good to go. There's no lingering issue whatsoever. There's at least some concern there with Jordan Love. So those are all injuries that Green Bay is keeping an eye on as they go into clearly their most important game of the season, as they need to win to stay alive. Now, they're not the only team in this game that has a lingering medical issue right now. Jalen Hurts, still not out of concussion protocol on Monday. Now, at least per the Vegas line, which last time I looked in the Potawatomi Sportsbook line, the last I looked, it was Packers 4-point underdogs, which would lead me to believe that the powers that be very much believe that Jalen Hurts is going to play in this game. It's actually now 4.5 for Philadelphia. It would, again, lead me to believe that Jalen Hurts is going to play in this game. That could certainly change if the status of Jalen Hurts changes. But as of right now, the expectation, I'm sure, is that Hurts is going to be back to play in time from that concussion. I'm less inclined to be, you know, concerned over Jalen Hurts and whether he's going to play or not. My guess is he plays as well. But I think the interesting aspect here is it's a player that's missed a couple weeks already. And if he can't get cleared until Friday or Saturday, he's going to have no practice time with the team this week. And we'll get a better indication tomorrow as to whether or not he actually did anything at practice and was, you know, was out there with his team, or if he still hasn't cleared. Like, those things can take some time to kind of clear those final hurdles. And even if he is, you know, working his way back in the, you know, not cleared the protocol, but working his way back and out on the field, it doesn't mean that he's a full go. He may not be able to do everything out there. So you could have a quarterback in Philly that has just a little bit of rust and isn't maybe in some of the same rhythm that he would like to be with his wide receivers and tight ends from being out and then not being able to practice this week. So that is a very interesting aspect to this as well. And we'll certainly keep an eye on Jalen Hurts' injury status as we get closer to the game. Green Bay does have two open roster spots. They will have to figure those out by tomorrow. There is a deadline of tomorrow of basically putting your playoff roster together. There are some unique circumstances where maybe you could get a player later based on some things. But for the most part, you kind of have to have that set by tomorrow. So look for Green Bay to make a couple transactions to add two players to their active 53. And then probably if they are call-ups from the practice squad, then to add two practice squad players, or they could add players from the outside as well. It would not stun me if one of those players that gets added to the 53 is Sean Clifford. The reason being is Goody is brought up in the past. You know, once playoff time nears, you kind of want to have those three quarterbacks on the active roster so that you can utilize one of those players as your emergency third quarterback, which if they're on the practice squad, you cannot do that. You don't want to get into a playoff game, especially if Love and Malik Willis are a little bit banged up and those two guys all of a sudden can't play. And now you've got to do something crazy, like put like a Jaden Reed or a Malik Heath or something crazy at quarterback, and you're just lost at that point, right? So it would not stun me if Sean Clifford was one of those players that got added to the 53 so that they can, again, use that emergency third quarterback on game day. And then we'll just have to kind of look. It wouldn't surprise me if Omar Brown, the safety that they've called up a couple times already, was the other one, especially with some of the injuries in the secondary. And then they add two players to the practice squad. But we'll see. We know Goody likes to be creative and you know, maybe look at some different options to add to this roster. Well, he's going to have some flexibility over the course of the next 24 hours to add two players to this team, and then, you know, potentially a couple of practice squad guys as well, depending on if they call some guys up from the practice squad. So we'll keep an eye on that as well. And then last but not least, before we get to our commercial break and then get to Dusty Evely coming up in just a moment, the Packers ranks at the end of the season. So this is a team that there's a lot of people that are frustrated with. This is a team that, you know, there's these, you know, I guess some people, you know, talking about Matt LaFleur and how he's doing a bad job as a head coach or those sort of things. This is where Green Bay finished the season in some very key categories. They finished the season 8th in points per game, 6th in points per game allowed, 5th in point differential, 5th in total yards gained, 5th in total yards allowed, 5th in yards gained per play, 8th in yards allowed per play, 4th in takeaways, 5th in rushing yards, 3rd in turnover differential, 4th in offensive DVOA, which is just an advanced way of basically saying you're going to take into account the opponents that you've played. So 4th in offensive DVOA, 7th in defensive DVOA, 15th in special teams DVOA, and 3rd in overall DVOA. I mean, those are some very, very impressive overall ranks on the season. One more time, 8th in points, 6th in points allowed, 5th in point differential, 5th in yards gained, 5th in yards allowed, 5th in yards gained per play, 8th in yards allowed per play, 4th in takeaways, 5th in rushing yards, 3rd in turnover differential, 4th in offensive DVOA, 7th in defensive DVOA, 15th in special teams DVOA, and 3rd in overall DVOA. And this is a statistically really, really good team. Now, if you want to make the argument that they've made a lot of their hay versus some really crappy opponents, okay, sure. Now, DVOA takes that into consideration. Now, it takes away their overall ranks, not necessarily just their, you know, the wins or losses. And they've lost to good teams. They've mostly beat, besides the Bears, the bad teams on their schedule. And they have to go out and prove that they can beat a good team. That's going to be their test this week. They haven't been able to do so yet. But any idea that this has been a really, you know, just a bad team, or that their numbers don't add up, and it, you know, whatever, that doesn't seem that way. Like, everything statistically, analytically would tell you that this is very clearly a top 10, if not top 8, if not top 5 team in the.
Waiting to hear back from Andy Herman here now. We'll see if we can get him back in live. We're going to be joined here by Dusty Evely pretty shortly here on the Pack-A-Day radio show. What do you think right now about Matt LaFleur's performances? Do you think that Green Bay is unjustly coming after him this season, or do you believe that they are going to be fine coming towards Philly? Let's head to a quick break here. We're going to see if we can get Andy Herman back here, joined by Dusty Evely. It's Pack-A-Day radio show, live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM The Fan studios, powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Pack-A-Day radio show, live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM The Fan studios, and powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook. Reminder that we've got the Mason Crosby Show with Mitch Nellis coming up next from 9 to 11. Ryan Longwell is going to be joining at 9:20 a.m. Going to be a great conversation with him, so make sure to check that out. Also, we've got a brand new show on The Fan. Check out the three-time Emmy-nominated Rich Eisen Show today from 11 to 2 on The Fan. Great to have Rich Eisen part of the team here. And again, always great to hear Rich on the radio every single time, so make sure to check that out. Right now, we are being joined by Dusty Evely, Acme Packing Company, and the Pack-A-Day podcast. And you can find him a variety of other places as well. He's the absolute best. You can find him on Twitter at Dusty Evely. Dusty, my friend, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Doing pretty good on a Tuesday morning. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Great to hear your voice, and great having you on. Interesting week, obviously. You're coming off a not-so-fun Packers-Bears outcome and game. You have the wild card round coming up against the Philadelphia Eagles. So, Dusty, let me just start by asking you this. Where's your headspace on this Packers team going into this week? Are you optimistic? Are you confident? Are you confused? Are you frustrated? Where are we at with this Packers team right now?
Yes. That's every single one of those things. No, I mean, I'm sitting about where I typically sit at this time of the week. I've kind of done my look back on the game. I've seen what's gone wrong, and you know me, that I'm optimistic to a fault at times with how I view things, especially before a game. So it's one of those where, like, listen, they can clean up this, they can clean up that, if they can clean up this, they can beat them. They haven't shown to be that team this year. They've been, you know, maddeningly inconsistent with what a young team is going to happen. But I like where they're at. I kind of have a good feel for this team. I say that that's hoping Jordan Love is healthy, obviously, but I think they can win because I do think this team can beat anyone when they're on, but the margin's just relatively slim. They've not shown that they can be consistent. I'm concerned about the Eagles' defense against this Packers offense where they currently are. I think when we get to prediction time, not to step on that, I think I'm going to predict Packers win because I'm a big old homer and I'm very optimistic. But I also think it's going to be tough. There's a very good Eagles team. Very good Eagles team playing well with a very good defense. But I don't feel as bad about them, which is typically the case a couple days after a game. I still feel like they are a good team despite what happened this past Sunday. It's just the margins are slim, which it's been all season, and they haven't quite progressed the way we kind of I know that's certainly the way I kind of hoped that they would.
Yeah, same here, but I'm optimistic as well going into this week. I think it's going to be a really fun game. As you went back and watched the tape, Packers-Bears, what kind of stood out to you? What gave you cause for concern, optimism, and just kind of, again, stood out on tape from this past week?
Yeah, I mean, the offense, the defense I'm excited about, the last call notwithstanding. The defense, I think, Halfley's doing everything he possibly can to get as much as he can out of this group. I think we'll get a defensive backfield later, so I'm not going to touch on that at the moment. But offensively, it's not that they can't get out of their own way. It's just that there are certain things they struggle with that they still are just having a hard time with. I mean, I think the Vikings game, for sure, put in stark contrast. You know, they can't get off of man coverage. They get beat up. The Vikings were a little more physical than I think a lot of teams will be, but also in the playoffs, I typically let them play a little bit more. I think the Eagles have some of that in them as well. They don't have consistent winners at the line of scrimmage. Watson was their best at that, and obviously he is out. Wicks, I think, is their second best, but he's inconsistent, still with hands and a little bit of route running at times. So I think if you press this team, they just have a hard time. They have a hard time getting off the line initially. They have a hard time separating late in the down. And so, I mean, I think that's part of it. They also, they have a really hard time moving linebackers out of the middle of the field. And that makes it hard to function. So this past week, I don't have the stats pulled up in front of me. I wrote about this today over Accurate Packing. I think Love, when kept clean, was 7 for 10, something like that. And his average time to throw was 2.8 seconds. Usually if you're kept clean, your average time to throw is like 2.2 because you're getting that first read, you're getting it out quick, and that's why you're clean. Pressure a lot of times is just the quarterback hanging on the ball too long. He's getting to his third or fourth read. The Bears were doing that. The Vikings were doing that as well. And that's just that middle of the field. I mean, for years it was they don't have speed to stretch the field. Well, now defenses, they're just sitting in the middle of the field. Those linebackers are dropping deep. They're taking away the middle. They're taking away what they want to do. And they're having a really hard time moving them. So you've got this – you have this issue. I say that. I mean, they're still a good offense. But they're having this issue where they're having a hard time attacking the middle, which they want to do. They're trying to move those linebackers. They're having a really hard time moving those linebackers, even with a good run game. And they're having a hard time winning outside. And so you'll get these big plays. Obviously, they will make big plays. They made some big ones, especially for Willis down the stretch this last week's game. But down consistency, it's harder than it feels like it should be at this point.
That's the perfect way to say it. And it's so weird because you look at their last seven games as they get, you know, ready to go into the playoffs. They averaged 30 points per game over their last seven. Their worst game was a 22-point performance, which was just against the Chicago Bears. So, like, the floor is three touchdowns plus for this yeah. offense, and their running game with Josh Jacobs is really good. Even in the game where they didn't score a ton, it's Jordan Love missing for over half the game and Josh Jacobs being benched in the second half. So it's like you look at the overall point production and some of the things that they're doing, and it feels like this is really not that bad. Like we were probably nitpicking a little bit, but you watch it in real time, you watch it on tape, you do the rewatch and everything, and it just, to your point, it looks way harder than it should. I think way harder than we were expecting, and you know, credit to the other defenses too, but it just has never really felt in rhythm. At even when they've been putting up points this year, it hasn't felt, I think, the way that we expected it to going into the season. Would you agree?
Yeah, I'd say that. I mean, I think part of that is probably expectations. You know, you think everyone's going to progress the way that you kind of hope they will, and they're going to be humming in the way they were last year. And I mean, it is a little more herky-jerky. I mean, I'll also say, I mean, you know that I've been covering the Colts passing game, Colts offense this year as well, over at Colts Wire with Paul Bredel. You want to say, like, the Packers offense doesn't look good? Like, man, I'll show you a herky-jerky offense.
Right.
So, really, like, in the grand scheme of things, it's not that bad. Like I said, I'm nitpicky, and you're nitpicky with this stuff because we do get so far in the weeds with this. It just feels like you want a smoother operation. I think some of that is also I have frustration with the lack of aggressiveness with fourth down calls, third down calls, stuff like that. Some of the smoothness there, but just the down operation, they're fine. Like the run game has been tremendous. They're creative and they're very creative offensively. They've got some playmakers. There's just, I think really it's just a handful of times per game. I mean, the Vikings game, they were just beat up, and the Vikings game is almost like that's different from every other game that's been played this year. Although that Eagles game is maybe, I wouldn't be shocked if they take a page out of that playbook, but it does feel like it's not maybe the wholesale thing. It is just a handful of moments per game when it's like, all right, we got to have this man. It's a 3rd and 5. And it's just no one's opening a scramble for his life. And it comes in a stark contrast. But really, they've been pretty good. It's just not been nearly as consistent as we kind of hoped.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Now, one of the things that's not going to help with that, of course, and something we talked about in our first segment here, is the loss of Christian Watson. And what's that going to mean for this team? How important is Christian Ben? What does this loss mean? And maybe more importantly, what are some things that they can try to do to overcome and mitigate the loss of Christian?
Yeah, I mean, the loss of Watson's huge. I mean, the main talking point around that is his speed and what that opens up underneath. And honestly, the more I think about it, that's such a small part of it. They've got speed. They've got speed in ways they had in the past. Obviously, no one like Watson, but there's very few people in the league that can run like him. But really what he's done, he's kind of grown into a very good receiver beyond the speed. There's also like some of the stuff he does in the quick game where he can throw. He's been able to be very good at like throttling down into spaces this year. So he's your best winner off the ball. He's your best kind of threatening and then kind of coming back to get something underneath. So even like a 5-yard gain, Watson's very good at that stuff. But then his big thing, I mean, obviously you want everyone to block. The way this running game is working right now, you need that. My initial thought was, all right, well, Melton's fast. Just do stuff with Melton. Melton can't block, dude. And so you even saw, like, I mean, that end around, that fourth down end around, which stopped doing end arounds on fourth down, please and thank you. They ran to Melton's side, and he's blown up. If that's Watson, I don't know if Watson, I kept calling him the best blocker, best wide receiver blocker on the team. I don't know if that's true because Wicks is incredible. So you almost have to, like, mishmash it. I almost want, you hate to lose some of what Wicks can give you in his role. But I think if you put Wicks in, like, the Watson role, which big man run fast, also, block to his side, and then Melton, you bring Heath in a little more as your kind of blocker, you lose some speed there. I think you can work around this to some extent, but I think you need Wicks working in a role that Watson has been working in, which typically he hasn't done. I mean, he does some of that stuff. But I do think you need, I think you need Wicks on the field. I've not looked at his snap counts. He's on the field quite a bit. I just think you need to switch his role a little bit more and get Heath on the field more. And then I think you'll be fine. But it's just, I think what you lose with him, with Watson in the quick game and the run game kills you more than his speed does. Cause they've got speed they can threaten you with outside of Watson. But it's just, I mean, beyond what he gives you on the field, it just sucks, dude. Like seems like a good dude. He's finally like relatively healthy this year. You know, the hamstring issues were kind of behind him. The drops, he had to drop this past week, but only the second on the season. Felt like he was really starting to, like, come into his own as a wide receiver for this to happen. Just sucks for it. Sucks for the team. Sucks for him so much, dude. I feel terrible for him.
It really does. Going back to that end around, that reverse to Jaden Reed. Man, I hated that play call in real time. I don't know how you have Bo Melton on that side when you call that play. Like it's just because I think there wasn't there a quarter break in between two where you can line that up correctly, whatever it was. But the fact that you've got Malik Heath on the bench, who's a good blocker, I think Wicks was maybe lined up on the other side, if I remember correctly. Just switch Melton and Wicks. Like, that isn't going to be necessarily a tell that you're running to that side or anything. Like, the fact that, like, those are just like these head scratching things that happen in this game of like, how do you have, you're going to run to that side. The most important block is that wide receiver's, and you're going to put your worst blocking wide receiver in that spot. Just some crazy head scratching stuff that took place in this game. I don't understand it, Dusty.
Yeah, no, he got blown. I don't think I noticed it was Melton live. I was not watching.
I didn't either.
That. I was watching like, hey, let's get a first down here. And then I watched again, like, why is Melton? It may have been Melton and Reed to that side, which for everything I like about Reed is a No, Reed had the handoff. There was someone else over there who was not a great blocker. Maybe a Musgrave or something on that side as well. I mean, to your point as well, Andy, say, like, maybe you telegraph you're going to run, fine. Like, I don't just get your best guys over there. At some point, you're overthinking this stuff. Like, you know, if it's, we might telegraph a little bit what we're trying to do, what we're trying to run, and then we inch a linebacker slightly over to that side, I think you gain that back by having dude two guys can you block on that.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, that was not, I didn't like the play call. That's when I realized it was Melton as like the key block to that side.
Yeah, not certainly ideal. You kind of brought up before the defensive backfield. I wanted to kind of ask you about this. One of the more interesting takeaways from this game that, you know, nobody really cares about or haven't really talked about because there's a billion other things that went wrong in this game that we're talking about. This one actually was rather interesting. Ketan Oladapo, the safety in this game in nickel, they continue to use Javon Bullard in the slot with obviously Xavier McKinney at safety, and then really it was Carrington Valentine and Keyshawn Nixon on the outside. There was a little bit of Eric Stokes and a little bit of Corey Valentine late in this game and some obvious pass situation looks, but for the most part, they decided their nickel was going to be Oladapo at safety with Bullard in the slot, and again, basically benching Eric Stokes and just playing Carrington Valentine full-time. Now, we're going to have to wait and see what Zane Anderson's status is. We found out yesterday he was still in concussion protocol. We're going to have to wait and see if Evan Williams is going to be able to play. It didn't seem super optimistic from Matt yesterday, but your thoughts on how this secondary is aligned, seemingly Carrington Valentine taking the full-time spot and no really rotation there with Eric Stokes, and what they should do at safety depending on the health. Like, can you go into, you know, this game with Ketan Oladapo at safety next to Xavier McKinney if you want to, or is that just a one game one-off? Like, what do you think of this secondary right now?
Man, I tell you, so I liked Oladapo pre-draft. I don't, you know me, I don't do a lot of draft stuff, but I really liked him, and I was excited to see what he was going to do. And the vision in my mind of the player he was going to be is different than the player we saw this past week. And I was like, well, he's a bigger body, right? He's like a box thumper. They used him with McKinney out there. They used him more as like the post safety, and they were rolling McKinney down. I think Oladapo may have had more post-safety snaps than McKinney did because they had him, McKinney down as robber, down at slot sometimes. I thought Oladapo was great, dude. Like, beyond, I don't know that he had a splash play. I think he had a tackle on one of Caleb Williams' scrambles, if I'm not mistaken. You could see him communicating out there on a level that you don't see young guys like that doing. I think this was his first full game. Pre-snap, he's making pre-snap checks. He had one on the last drive of the game. It was that little like mesh crosser to DJ Moore. I think on third down, the Bears had. He's telling there. Packers are some kind of match coverage. It looks like man, but some kind of match coverage. Oladapo drops to the side that like Moore starts on, and from the jump, from the snap, he sees that crosser. He's screaming at Nixon. Pick up DJ Moore. I got whoever the other crosser was. And Nixon, you know, doesn't hear him. He doesn't pick him up. He takes a man-to-man across the field, and then Moore separates and gets the first down on that play. But that stuff, like Oladapo, like just a very, he's like a very heady player. I really liked what I saw from this past week. So, you know, if Williams was back, that'd be cool. But I think if they went into this game, that same exact alignment. I think Bullard had his struggles, but they obviously Bullard view him as a slot. They'll roll him back occasionally. But if you go Valentine, Nixon outside, Bullard slot, Oladapo, and we'll see what he does in his second game, but Oladapo, McKinney back at safety. I wasn't sure how Oladapo would look in this game. I came away, that was the guy, I had notes all over the place watching the defense. I was like, he was not splash plays. He was solid. He was where he was supposed to be, and he was clearly communicating to others, both like, there was more than a couple where he's communicating pre-snap, line up. There's motion. Then he's making hand signals to check the motion on that side. Like, that's in his first game doing that. So I was really, really impressed with him. So I think if they go in this week and do that against a smart, good Eagles offense, I think you could do a lot way worse than having Oladapo and McKinney Rope in the back there.
If everyone's healthy, I'm assuming this is still Evan Anderson next to, Evan Williams next to McKinney. And then if it's not, who would you play, Zane Anderson or Ketan Oladapo, based on what you saw this last game, if everyone's healthy?
I'd go Oladapo. And part of that is he's younger, and I just think there's more. I really liked him, and so I think maybe there's more upside there. But I think him coming in doing this so young in his first game, I think there's a lot of promise there. So I would go Oladapo and not think twice about it. Now, again, it's his first game. Maybe it's a fluke, but I just think the way he played, the intelligence he played at, I want that out there for a defense that I don't think is overly complicated, but it still feels like there's guys settling in a little bit, and Oladapo just, at least in this first game, his first really full game, seemed to really get that. So I want that out there.
I love it. All right, before we get you out of here, Dusty, what are you watching for in this Packers-Eagles game? And then I know you kind of spoiled your prediction a little bit, but what are you overall expecting from this outcome?
I'm going to predict the Packers win. I'm going to expect a relatively sloppy game. Obviously, you know, Love, I don't think we've got a ton of clarity on yet, but it seems like he's probably going to play. Seems like probably a run-heavy approach, I would guess. And the Eagles, I'm curious how this plays out because the Packers, for all of their pomp and circumstance, misdirection of the backfield and all that stuff, really just want to run up the gut with Josh Jacobs, with all of that kind of split gun spinner series stuff. Like, that's what they want to get to. Early in the season, they did more kind of outside pitch stuff, and I think against this Eagles defense, that's almost where you want to live a little bit. You need to widen that front because they do have, you know, those two big dudes in, up front. You also got linebackers like Dakobe Dean, who's playing really well, that sideline to sideline speed a bit. So it makes it does make it tough to stretch. I think you need to move those defensive linemen. You need to move the front a bit. So I do expect run heavy, whether or not Love is healthy, and then you get and then take your shots where you can. I think I kind of mentioned Wicks earlier. I do think he plays a big part in how this plays out. His impact. I think he's going to make up a big plays. And as far as I think they're going to get beat up, I think Kraft is going to have to make a couple plays in the passing game as well. So I think it's going to, I mean, hopefully a cleaner game than week one, right? Just do the field if nothing else. But I don't anticipate a pretty game. I think the Packers are going to try to just knock the snot out of them a little bit up front. And I think that's where they're going to kind of base this game. So I think that's where I'm going to go. I don't think it's going to be pretty. I go Packers 24-20. I do think I think part of this is defensively. I think they have their holes defensively. You know, I like what Valentine's showing. I don't love Nixon full time on the outside still. I think he has shown some issues there. I don't love Bullard in the slot right now. But I think with what they're doing with the safety, with what Halfley is throwing, with like some of the sim pressures and the post snap rotations and all that, like, he's really trying to trick guys. And whether that's Hurts, who I assume is going to play, or a guy like Tanner McKee, you know, obviously that plays better against McKee. I think you get chances for a couple interceptions, regardless of who's back there. I think you get more if it's McKee, and I think you got to come down with those. So I think turnovers on defense is what swings the game. And offensively, I mean, they got to be more aggressive third and fourth down. I think they got to score in the red zone. I think they had four trips in the red zone against the Eagles and one touchdown in those four trips. And they've been better in the second half of the season, but they got to be aggressive. This is the last game of the season, potentially. So I need. I think it's going to be a rough and tumble game a little bit. I need LaFleur to kind of like points are at a premium, but not just any points. We can't do field goals. We need to be aggressive and get touchdowns here.
I love it. Dusty, you're the absolute best. What do you got coming out at Acme Packing Company or anything else you're working on this week?
Yeah, I've got the one that's up now that's just on the Packers passing game. We're talking about Love, talking about Willis, and then I've got a couple I'm going to be writing. One kind of a red zone plan, some red zone plays that have worked against the Eagles that I like kind of drawing and sketching those up like against them this year, so I've got that, and then a third and fourth down plan. No one wants to look back at the Bears game anymore. Usually I do 2 to 3 articles about the previous game. I'm done with that. We're looking forward to the Eagles. So a couple of those coming out, and then I'm not sure what else. Maybe talking to Ross, maybe talking to John Kuhn. I'm not entirely sure, but I got the Pack a Day podcast with Steve and Sarah hitting tomorrow. So I've got that. Going to be doing that tonight as well.
All right. Well, we're looking forward to all of it, Dusty. Like I said, you're the absolute best. Thanks so much for taking the time. I'm sure we'll talk to you soon as we get, you know, either post this Eagles game or as we get closer to the offseason too. There's a lot to discuss, so we'll be bringing you back on, I'm sure. Again, make sure to follow him on social media at Dusty Evely. And of course, you can find him on Acme Packing Company and the Pack-A-Day podcast as well. When we come back, we're going to be going to the phone, so get those phone calls into the Nicolay Law Fan Talk and Text Line, 414-677-1250. It's a Pack-A-Day radio show live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM The Fan Studios, powered by the Pottawatomie Sportsbook. You are listening to the Pack-A-Day radio show live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM The Fan Studios, powered by the Pottawatomie Sportsbook. My name is Andy Herman. A huge thank you to Dusty Evely for coming on in that second segment. Always great chatting with Dusty. I absolutely love his attention to detail and everything that he does to break down the Packers. Again, you can find him on social media at Dusty Evely. As mentioned earlier, we do have a brand new show on The Fan. Check out the 3-time Emmy-nominated Rich Eisen show today from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on The Fan. Always excited to hear from Rich Eisen and excited that he is part of our new lineup right here. So make sure to check that out again, 11 to 2 today. As mentioned, we'll get to your phone call and text and Twitter questions, and we are going to start with Nate from Milwaukee, from North Milwaukee, I should say. Nate says, good morning, Andy. I feel like Jordan Love doesn't run enough to make the defense fear that part of his game. Also, Matt LaFleur does doesn't use any designed runs. What do you think? I do think this is an interesting aspect, Nate. It's something I was actually thinking about a little bit earlier. Earlier in the season when he had the injury, it made a ton of sense. Now, Jordan's not the most fleet of foot. I would kind of compare him to early Aaron Rodgers, where, you know, he had the ability to scramble and he could pick up yards. He's not somebody that you're necessarily constantly fearing. It's not, we're not talking like Lamar Jackson or Jalen Hurts here or anything, but he's got a solid ability to scramble. There's been a multitude of times this year where they've run some third and fourth down plays. Usually it's within that play where you've got the bunch to the side and then they motion either a wide receiver or running back from the backfield into that bunch, and you can either hand it off in the middle if you get the right numbers, or you can throw to the outside. It's really tough to number that up just in general. And Jordan Love can read that. And if the numbers aren't right on the outside, he can throw that little bubble screen to the outside. If the numbers are right to the outside, then he can hand to the usually Josh Jacobs, the running back, inside. And Jacobs is going to pick up solid yardage. But there has to be an evolution to that, because you're really also kind of reading the defensive end on the play. A lot of times that player is unblocked. And there hasn't been a single play this year where that end has read Jordan Love as to like he's going to keep it in any real way. And there's absolutely on some third and fourth in shorts where if you run that play and use it as like a read option, and you know you've use the motion to the outside to get people outside, to get numbers outside, and if they don't, again, you could still throw it. And then if you don't throw it, basically use it as a read with either handing to Jacobs, or if the defensive end crashes down on Jacobs, you can go and then run. I mean, there's an easy 5-10 yards there for you if you want to take it. I do think that that's something that they need to add a little bit in, even with Jordan. I'm not saying you need to make the run game, you know, paramount to this offense or like a huge part of it or anything like that, but using it as a wrinkle here and there, I think can absolutely be effective. And then the other thing I will add is, one of the things that Green Bay struggled with, Dusty talked about this last segment as well, and it was very apparent to Minnesota, is they're struggling a little bit to get off of man coverage. Well, one of the things against man coverage is, unless they're using a QB spy, which as far as I can recall, I don't really recall many teams using a spy against Jordan Love. Why would you? You're not accounting for the quarterback, and guys' backs are turned. They're going to cover. You don't have vision on the QB. So one of the things that you can do if those initial reads aren't there, try to step up in the pocket and then gain yards with your feet if it's available to you. I do think if teams are going to go a bit more man-to-man, Jordan's got to be willing to, when those initial reads aren't there, especially because the offensive line usually does a pretty good job of buying him some time, pull that ball down and go get some yards with your feet. Now get down, slide, and make sure you're not taking any big hits, not, you know, leaving the ball susceptible to, you know, a fumble or anything like that. But I do think it's something that, especially in man coverage, you've got to be a little bit more willing to scramble. And I do think in some of those situations where you're going with some of almost those kind of like gadget read plays where you have to show that Jordan Love can keep that. And it, like, just the fact that he would keep it on a couple of those plays too, now keeps that end a little bit more honest. And if you do hand it off to Josh Jacobs, it's going to make those runs more successful as well, because teams are now worried, oh, Jordan Love could keep the ball. So Nate, I am with you. I don't think I don't want to see in the box score at the end of the game that Jordan Love is rushed like 6, 7, 8 times. My guess is if that's the case, things have probably not gone very well, because you'd prefer that he's getting the ball out of his hands and making plays with his arm instead of his legs. But I do think it needs to be something that is a bit more of an option, and that you tease a little bit more just to keep the defense honest. And again, it's going to actually set up Josh Jacobs in the running game a little bit better, because teams are like having to at least stay honest against Jordan Love as a option to run with it. So I do think that there's something there, Nate, and I do definitely agree with you. One of the things I was looking at yesterday as I was recording today's podcast with Justice Mosqueda, he brought up all the mistakes that Green Bay made in that first game. And he's like, he was going to go on this project of going back and rewatching the Eagles game and counting all the different mistakes that happened in week one that forced Green Bay to lose. And in real time, I'm like, wait. I'm pretty sure I did this. And sure enough, we spent a little bit too much time trying to go back and find this specific tweet, but we eventually found it. Justice was the one who actually found it. There were 39 mistakes that I counted in that first week against the Eagles. Remember, they lost, I think 34-29. They lost by 5 points in that game. Now, it's week one. It's a slippery field, and there's a lot going on. But here were the litany of mistakes that Green Bay made in week one and still only lost by 5 points. You had a false start on a late snap by Josh Myers. You had a 12 men on the field penalty, which negated a touchdown to Jaden Reed. Had a false start on fourth down and had to punt instead of being able to go for it. You had a missed protection on a Zach Bond sack. You had a holding on Rashid Walker in the red zone. A Dontavian Wicks drop. Holding on Tucker Kraft in the red zone. Watson dropped a touchdown, and you had Romeo Doubs called for an illegal pick on the play, which was an iffy call, but Watson dropped a touchdown anyway. Then Jordan Love missed Christian Watson in the end zone. You had a neutral zone infraction by Kenny Clark.
A lot of mistakes indeed with this Green Bay Packers team against Philadelphia the very first time as well. I'm going to see if we can get Andy Herman back here before the end of the show and try to get his takes and his final thoughts on this game as well, too. I, for one, think that this Packers team is set up very well against Philadelphia. You're going up against the Eagles, a team that hasn't played their starting quarterback since week 16. You have a team that rested all their starters in a game that didn't matter in week 18. And Green Bay still got to play a little bit of their starters in week 18 as well, even though they lost that game to the Bears. Ultimately, the game really didn't matter. The Commanders won. They were going to be the seventh seed regardless. I think that this game against Philadelphia is really set up for a trap game with them. All the pressure is on Philadelphia and Nick Sirianni. You do not need to see the Green Bay Packers go into this game as another seven seed expecting to win this game. So I think that Nick Sirianni feels much more of this pressure than Matt LaFleur and the Green Bay Packers do. The Packers now don't have another wide receiver option. They're going to have to go in there without Christian Watson. They're not going to have that luxury of excess at the running back position as well either. And Andy Herman, sounds like we're back here. Andy, you got me?
Yes, we are. Where did I end up? Where did I leave off?
Well, I was just talking about how I feel that when we were talking about the mistakes and against Philadelphia the first time around, that I still believe a lot of this pressure is off Green Bay and more on Philadelphia for this game.
Yeah, did we go through any of the mistakes at all?
No, you did say you had 39 of them, though, and you were, I think, beginning to rattle some off.
All right, perfect. So, yeah, so my apologies for the technical issues today. But, yeah, there were 39 mistakes. We probably don't have time to run through it. Maybe we'll be able to do that tomorrow. But 39 mistakes in this game for Green Bay that ultimately led to Green Bay's poor performance and a loss by 5 points. And it's just kind of crazy that they were that sloppy and still only lost by five. Now, obviously, Philadelphia, not a fully functioning machine that they became. Also, in week one, they had their share of mistakes as well. It's going to be a totally different game. As Matt LaFleur mentioned yesterday, it's basically two entirely different teams. It felt like a season ago that this game took place, and it's going to be a very different matchup, especially going into Philly as well. But if they can mitigate some of those mistakes, and I agree with Tommy with what he's saying of how, hey, this is a game where there's, Green Bay's playing a little bit with house money. I know it's you lose and you're out, so there's always a level of pressure that comes with that. But the expectations are that Philly wins. Green Bay's coming off back-to-back losses. There's no momentum. Like, you've got to go into this game almost like you're playing with house money. And I think we're going to know relatively early on if Green Bay's playing loose and free and actually not coming off to a slow start like they have in their losses, or if they're bringing things to Philly early like they did with Dallas a season ago. We'll get to those mistakes probably on tomorrow's show, just to kind of roll through those, because it was a laundry list of mistakes that is kind of crazy to look back on. But for right now, let's get to our Potawatomi Sportsbook final thought of the day.
You got to do some smart thinking.
It's time for Andy Herman's final thought of the day.
What are you thinking?
Powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook.
What the hell were you thinking?
You're listening to the Pack a Day radio show on 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, The Fan.
I think one of the things that Green Bay has to do is go back and look at that Philadelphia Eagles game and realize that their defensive game plan in that one did not work. Now, we don't know for sure if Jalen Hurts is going to play, although I think it's a pretty solid expectation, and I'm sure Green Bay is going to prepare for him one way or the other. What they really decided to do in that first week was make sure that Jalen Hurts did not win with his legs and kept him in the pocket, which sounded good, except he had all day to throw and pick Green Bay apart with A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and their entire plethora of wide receiver options. So you're going to have a bit of a different different plan. I think you're going to have to bring a lot more pressure in this game. You can't let Jalen Hurts just sit and pick you apart. He will be able to do so. I'm not saying that you want to allow him to get free with his legs either. That certainly complicates things, but the game plan to just let him sit in the pocket and win with his arm was not a successful game plan in week one, and Jeff Hafley's going to have a bit of a different approach as they go into this game, especially if he's hopefully a little bit rusty. Maybe put a little bit more pressure. Maybe you can get a couple throws that go awry, and maybe Xavier McKinney and friends can take advantage of those and get a couple turnovers for this Packers defense, which is going to be paramount to their success in this game. All right, that is going to do it for me today. Thank you for Tommy for filling in when we had a couple audio issues there. Stay tuned to the Mason Crosby Show with Mitch Nellis coming up next from 9 to 11 right here on The Fan. Ryan Longwell is going to be joining at 9:20, so check that out. You can find the Pack-A-Day podcast 365 days a year wherever you get your favorite podcasts. We'll be back tomorrow to break down the film with Wes Hodkowitz and review everything that's going on with this team as they get ready to pick up a win in Philadelphia. This has been the Pack-A-Day radio show live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM The Fan Studios, powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook. Enjoy your Tuesday, everyone.